Now, the shotgun start in golf is full of mathematics. There's a lot of setup work that we have to do in order to make a tournament work. So I'm going to demonstrate to you just exactly how we do a shotgun start here.
And here we go.
All right, all right, all right. Gentlemen, start your
greetings and welcome to a Friday edition of the Shotgun Start. It is April 16th. Andy, how we doing?
Brendan, I'm doing great. You know, we've booked our next time we're going to be recording together.
Oh, yeah.
It's exciting stuff.
Are we breaking news here? I mean, it's not news. It's absolutely not news. It's the most insignificant little... But yeah, that felt good. I went and booked a flight today for the first time. I think since like early 2020, it felt awkward. It felt weird. It's such an integral part of my life for so long. I was looking at flights. It was odd, but we will be together at an upcoming major championship, Kiawah Island. We're going to go for bike rides on the beach together, maybe.
Oh,
record,
yeah.
Podcasts. Do all sorts of stuff.
Lots of animal content to be had out there. Tons of animal
content
to be had.
Now that you talk about it, we may have an animal content exclusive only, like, Instagram story that week. That could be fun. But we're pumped, man. I'm vaccinated, getting back out on the road. I'm excited. So
I literally cannot wait to be out at a golf event. Like, it's been so long. I'm so excited that it's gonna be awesome.
No BS. Like, I talk with you on the side, you know, text, and I am of the like mind. You are very, very excited about this one. Venue, just like the potential for it.
Yeah.
It feels like...
We'll get into it in a little bit. I got a little flashback that might lean that way rather than Harbortown. You know, I feel like we've told the most important story of Harbortown and Boo and the Boo Stopper. You know, between the two of them, I don't know what else there is to tell about Harbortown's history as a venue and the great championships other than those two stories. The Boo Stopper is in the mix.
He is? Oh, my God. Where is he? What's that mean?
He's 3 under.
Like 230?
Yeah, okay. He's right in the mix. He's
17, 68. Not in line for a 10-shot win, but he's threatening. He's all right. He's hanging in there. So
he's just got to feel like a new man when he got out of Augusta, you know, instead of hitting into all those hills, you know, hitting three woods all day. He's you know, on a course that fits his, he feels comfortable. It's a course his scale.
Seemed like he might have been in trouble at Augusta when he was... late Wednesday night, yelling at Alan Shipnuck about how the fairways are soft and the greens are like concrete, and he had no chance. So that was probably a sign that he maybe wasn't going to be slipping into the green jacket come Sunday. But he's got a new life in Harbortown. The DL3
Here's
the
question.
DL3 rejuvenation going to Harbortown, where your game peaks and your mental catches up.
So he had his scripting planned out for the weekend in Augusta. He just plop that into the Thursday, Friday of this week? I didn't say he was out early. I didn't see any of his shots. Does he go with that scripting at the start of the week, or does he save it for the weekend, this weekend?
He probably adds. He probably just doubles up and keeps it, right? Can I just, as several astute, I don't know, followers on Instagram pointed out when I posted his scripting, Brian Gay's master scripting, just complete insanity. Four different white shoes with the slightest variation, basically all white. Four of pretty much the exact same looking shoes, but different ones. Four white shoes. Which just seems
living that,
so
he's living that
wasteful.
G4 life, you know?
It's so wasteful. I mean, even Nike doesn't do that. They double up. If it's going to be a gray one, they just, you know? So
this G4 life is cheating kids into college and
missing balls, skipping balls,
and then giving a lot of small variations of shoes to their players.
And death to bogeys. Pray for birdies. Ah, bogeys are death. No, whatever those hats are. God, aggressive. Well, I gotta, before we get to Kiawah and all that, Harbortown. Maybe this could be in our those hats could be in. We got to talk about our Mother's Day gift guide. Mother's Day is bearing down on us.
Oh, I think didn't we even found know that we had a Mother's Day gift guide. This is news to me.
The absolute windfall of a Mother's Day gift.
Oh, I think some I know nice, where this is going.
Nice little piece of crystal. Your mom, grandma, wife, you know, can put a memento on their, you know, powder room, wherever, bookshelf. And inside the piece of crystal, the ball, it's only $50, is tournament-used hazard water from the 17th hole at TPC Sawgrass from the 2021 Players' Championship. Tournament-used hazard water. Now, I don't know if this is verified, and if the water is not your speed, as Will Knight's, you know, followed up, we've posted this to Instagram. It's on fanatics.com. This is a free ad. If you want tournament-used hazard water, that's where you go get it. And there's tournament used sand from the bunker at 17. So you could do both. You could flip, vary it up. Did you ever in your wildest dreams think you would encounter such a piece of, I don't know, memorabilia merchandise?
Well, you know, the thing that's most surprising, I'd expect this from a truly great merchandiser, you know, one of a kind merchandiser capitalizing on every moment. You know, but I wouldn't expect this from a nonprofit. That's what I wouldn't expect, the savvy and cunning. You know, and on top of this news, to also announce that you're opening your own casino.
Oh, yes.
As a nonprofit, it's just utterly unbelievable to me. It just really begs me to question what the whole nonprofit status is about, especially when tournaments. You're opening casinos, you're selling hazard water, and then tournaments are spending $20,000 on nets to contain golf balls.
Out of their own pocket.
That comes out of the charity. At the end of the day, the net expense comes out of the charity.
Sea Pines HOA is paying $20,000 in manpower, and no charitable money is getting cut into. Meanwhile, I mean, it's not just any hazard water. You use that term just so carelessly. It's tournament use. So it was in the pond
penalty area.
That's
area.
True. I was surprised they used the incorrect terminology there. It was not updated. That must be some e-commerce schmuck that wasn't aware of the rule book changes.
I think that's on Fanatics. That's probably
that's what
point
I'm
your
saying.
Blame at fanatics.com there. You know, not no, using no, the updated language of penalty area. Definitely on that.
Does some guy go out there with the turkey baster? Did they catch it on video? Is it verified? One of 400, you know, goblets of water that was in the drink that specific week? I just don't know how they can verify all this.
Purify it before they put it in there?
Well, that would
you
seem
know, because
sort of...
What if you get some unsavory pond water and it stinks up your house from inside the crystal?
Then you're kind of detracting from the authenticity of it. I think that's really just, you might as well just go to the sink or anything like that at that point if you're purifying. But
here's the next question. How many little crystal golf balls do you think that pond could fill? I mean, it seems like they've got almost unlimited demand here. You could do millions of little golf balls.
Right.
That's a big
is
pond.
Is that sealed? Is that a sealed body of water? Couldn't there be water flowing in and out? Maybe it is sealed, if I can remember. I don't know, though. It seems like, I guess it
is. Do they drain it?
Hazard water.
Do they drain it and fill the crystal balls and then replenish it after they fill the crystal balls? I have so many questions. Maybe I'll reach out to the PGA Tour and see if we could get an official comment. Maybe even somebody that's in charge with this initiative onto the podcast to talk about it.
$49.99. It ships free. You don't even have to pay shipping. So fantastic. Hey, what's going on with that sports book? Since I pushed this down to news. I mean, what, they've taken no rake. It's just purely nonprofit. It's where you can just go have fun. Or the rake just always immediately goes into, you know, the charity, some local food bank or something like that.
The Thunderbirds.
Yes.
The world's first ever nonprofit
casino.
Who knows?
Is that what we're getting at?
It seems the casino plus the 16th hole atmosphere. It seems like it could be a disaster. I just think that when you got people betting money and the players coming on there, I think the heckling is going to get turned up to, it's going to be turnt
Right?
Is that still in? Is Turnt still in?
I would doubt it. No, no.
I don't think it is. I think it was like 3 years ago.
You make an important point that Justin Thomas has raised. Like, if a guy's bet on me, against me, or against my opponent, like,
he's going to be quick with the, you're out of here, buddy.
But you're gone.
You're out of here, pal. I mean,
these people are bombed, and they go put $25 on whoever, and, you know, or a head-to-head or something, and all of a sudden they're trying to impact play. But anyways, the tour is running into the fleeting, the one-night stand of the gambling population, where it's they have no relationship with their players or product, but just simply as a, you know, a gambling operation, something to bet on, game. So
you're really
right.
Going to preclude us from ever having a gambling sponsor with those comments, you know?
I'm not against gambling. I'm fine with it. I just think it's becoming a little disproportionate. The tour is like forgetting that it even has a product anymore. It's just gambling, 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 head-to-head, wagers, odds, it's dark horses.
Well, they're listening to Darren Revell.
What about
consultant.
Darren Revell?
I don't know.
Just Darren Revell. Don't get me going, Darren Revell. I got an entire folder of Darren Revell nonsense, probably.
All right, should we talk about Cam Smith shoots a 62?
Sure, we can go there. I had a bunch of stuff. I thought we were going to clean up your event of the week, which is now concluded. The Western Intercollegiate,
yeah, we could Pepperdine, talk about that.
The Waves win. The Western Intercollegiate, they won handily, right? By significant margin, which happens
deepest
when you have
team, deepest
fives.
Team in college golf per Brentley Romine, the the great college golf expert at golfchannel.com. Without a dispute, the deepest team. And they lost Sahith Theegala from last year, the Haskins Award winner. So they lost the best player in the country, and they're still one of the best teams in the country and deepest teams in the country.
And they won the individual, the Highsmith kid. Joe Highsmith, I want to say, won individual. Went late into Wednesday. Course looked fantastic. A lot of rave reviews on Twitter of just, you know, this early week sort of appetizer. And obviously the venue popped a little bit. There were some, I don't know.
Carnage.
Interesting pins. Yeah. Dicey. Not dicey, but challenging pins.
They were dicey.
Yeah.
It was definitely on the edge. I think if it was a tour event, there would have been a lot of complaining, calling it Mickey Mouse and so on and so forth. But, like, you know, these kids are still of the age where, you know, they love the USGA. The USGA championships are the best tournaments they play in year out and year out, along with, like, the Western Am, where courses are pushed. This is before they've reached the Pampered Fucks Tour. So, you know, this is a delightful time to watch golf. Couple beefs. Pace of play is just absolutely atrocious. College coaches should be embarrassed with the pace of play they promote. I was watching like the 16th hole. Pepperdine's kid is way down there, and you know, both the Stanford kids hit their shots, and you know, the Pepperdine kid's been at the ball with his coach for, like, you know, while these other kids are hitting, and then, like, the camera's on him for like 2+ minutes, and the coach is like talking through stuff. It's like, what are you talking through that couldn't have been, you know, executed over here? And then you think about, like, these kids play really well when they're on their own playing amateur stuff in the summer. Just let the kids play. College golf needs to institute some sort of a rule around this coaching malarkey. Like, they should. It's like basically like they call a timeout before every fucking shot, and it's just atrocious. They need to speed up the pace of play. It shouldn't take like an hour and a half for them to play three holes. It's just abysmal. It's so horrendously bad, and the coaches are part of the problem, not part of the solution. And I'm sorry, I have friends that are college coaches, but you all get in the way. You're just getting in the way.
So it sounds like you're saying they're more than a part of the problem. They're a primary reason for the problem. No, a lot of these kids are slow to begin with, but I mean, what are the coaches doing at that point?
There are coaches that aren't part of the problem. I'm stereotyping. All right.
Yeah.
I'm guilty of stereotyping here, but for the most part, I only see college coaches slowing kids down. Like, they're acting like caddies, but they're acting like the heaviest handed caddies in the world, you know?
Sure. I could see that. I could see that. It was a good event, though, otherwise.
It was
that,
a great
that's
event.
That's a bone to pick you got.
One other bone to pick.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought I heard plural bones to pick. Okay.
One other bone to pick. I saw some chatter out there about how disrespectful it was to the women that they stayed on the telecast during the playoff to complete the tournament. This college golf, women's golf and college golf are in the same bucket where they both don't get nearly as much TV time as they should. Women's college golf, men's college golf, women's golf, they're all in the same bucket. But you cannot cut away from a championship that has been telecasted for 3 days that's coming to the end at a playoff. Like, you can't just cut away to the first round of an LPGA event. That's not... I want women's golf on all the time. They eventually found a solution of putting the women's golf on another channel. That they might have should have been done that right away. But you can't cut away on the last day of, like, just like ANWA. ANWA, it was great. The women played and they went over their allotted time and it cut into the PGA Tour. They did not cut away from the from ANWA to go to the PGA Tour. Like, you have to conclude the event. It would be a different thing if it was the second round and it was like, okay, they aren't done. There's two groups on the course. We're cutting to LPGA. That you do that, but you can't do that in a playoff. Like, imagine a basketball game or the NFL. You're watching your Browns. And they're like, you know, you're in overtime. The Browns are on the 10-yard line, and they cut to the start of the Ravens game.
Right.
Because the window's out. Like, it's just not a legitimate argument here.
Yeah, this all comes down. So I've belatedly been kind of mostly off Twitter and the Postmasters. So most people are hollering that they were kind of doing the LPGA wrong by not cutting in. Okay. Which is a Wednesday to Saturday event. I think this is almost perfectly analogous to the conflict we had a couple of weeks ago where the Tuesday to Friday Kenya Savannah Classic on the European Tour, right? It's a Friday sudden death playoff with Danny Van Tonder wins it. And they cut away from the playoff. They bumped it to streaming for Puerto Rico Open, like early second round coverage. I think it's all dependent on where you are in the tournament, right? As opposed to early first round action of an LPGA, PGA Tour, whatever it is. Should not incur.
You should always
on,
get the conclusion. It's what people invest all the time watching the event to get to is the conclusion. Right. You know, like if you've sat on your couch and watched, you know, something for 3 hours, you want to see it end.
Yep.
I have this other thing with finality. Like, if I start watching a TV series, even if it's god awful, I have to finish it. You know. It drives my wife nuts.
Really? Are you that way with books?
Where the no, books no. Stinks, well, I'm just not a very good reader.
Okay. All right. So moving on from the event of the week, Western Intercollegiate. Congrats to Pepperdine. I think, like, you know, if I was an all-world golfer, that might be on the short list of places I'd probably want to go play. Looking out at the Pacific and Malibu, it seems not bad. All right.
You know who,
other
you know who's a member of the media that played at Pepperdine?
Huh. Who?
Jeff Shackelford.
Oh, that's right. That's right. He didn't go to UCLA?
No, he went to Pepperdine.
Yeah, I thought he went to UCLA for some reason.
He's a Wave, a proud Wave alum.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Fantastic.
Where do you think the Waves ranks on college, you know, mascot?
It's fine. There's a lot of there's a lot of worse ones and less menacing ones out there. It's apropos, right?
I mean a wave is maybe the most menacing thing ever.
That's true. Depends on what
like
kind
a tidal wave.
Sure.
Is you know, devastating. It could be one of the most fierce mascots.
Yeah.
Do they have a mascot? Do they have like a guy in a wave suit?
I think they may have an anthropomorphic wave, like the box on Coligard. They might
That's
have.
That's what I was thinking.
I think they might. If you, I love watching Pepperdine and some of those. Like coming up, they had some basketball teams that would make the tournament, like Oral Bob.
Didn't
when we were
didn't
coming
Patty
of age.
Mills play at Pepperdine?
He went to St. Mary's. You went to St. Mary's.
I get
it,
the WCC but like, conference. All
that conference, so they make all the candy, was at Pacific. Like, there was some good basketball at Pepperdine coming when we were coming of age, at least. So, all right, this is a Friday episode talking Pepperdine hoops, late 2000, early 2000s. A couple other cleanup things before we get farther. Masters
you
pool
know who
winners.
Played at Pepperdine?
Basketball?
Yeah.
Doug Christie.
Yeah, you got it right. Can't believe you got that. Dennis Johnson. Dennis Johnson, too.
Okay.
All-time great scorer there.
God, it's sad how much I've fallen out in college hoops. I just can't keep up anymore.
How about Michael Thompson, the great Cleveland Cavalier?
Yeah.
Michael with a Y.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. all right, let's get off this. A couple other things. We never mentioned Masters pool winners, by the way, from Wednesday or Monday, whenever it was. Brandon Greenfield, John Pettit, David Egan, Larry Haverty, and Kevin Mitchell are our five Masters pool winners. I think Will Knight's setting you up with a hat, something like that. Appreciate
Congrats.
You guys. Those are our winners. We should give you your public glory there. One other bit of cleanup. Is Jeopardy listening to this podcast?
The town crier. And baton boy at the drum major.
Yeah, there was a drum major. There's baton. The person who swings the baton was a question.
Aaron Rodgers is a big golfer.
And Scrivener was also, not Jason proper, but Scrivener was an answer on Thursday or Wednesday night as well. Three in a row. I just, little spooky, if I must say. Your internet's all over the place today. That's all you. Your video keeps crapping out. All right, that's enough with cleanup. Let's go to PGA. It seems like you want to talk a lot about this. Camp Smith.
No, I don't. Oh, the tour? I don't really want to talk about this tour, but
we've been trying to talk about Camp Smith.
He shot 62. This is unbelievable.
There was some catnip about him fishing. Like, apparently he was fishing at Harbortown. It looked very orchestrated, set up for social media content.
He lost shots approaching the green.
Where did he do it? Did he just make everything? Putting or what happened?
Yeah, he chipped the hell out of it and it putted the hell out of it and he hit the tee ball good. He was fishing at Harbortown.
Yeah, it looked very orchestrated for social media content. He wandered out there with the cooler and was fishing in some nearby pond. I don't know. That was the big thing.
Do you see the Kira Dixon tweet of DJ and his button down
and his gingham check shirt? What was that all about? He had some probably RBC function he was hosting, but wanted to roll a few before going in, talking to his sponsors.
I love DJ.
That was ridiculous. That was funny. Stuart Sink shot a 63. I think he hit a ball in the water in his first hole or something and then went on and shot 63, 8 under. I didn't see the Stuart Sink resurgence coming. I got to be honest.
I know, but he played great. He was T12th at the Masters. He's back next year. It's unbelievable.
Good stuff. Matt,
I think he's finally recovered from the public outcry of his Open Championship win. He's the first, major champion since Bob Golby that people were legitimately pissed off about.
I think we need to verify that. Since Bob Golby, come on. There had to be a few in between there. But yeah, it was kind of those ones where we don't need to rehash the 2009 Open, but yeah, brutal. Anything else from Harbortown that jumped off? Sergio, there was highlights. We have a investigative reporter on the ground who's covering it for the local paper. I want to say Rietveld on Twitter. Go follow him. He's got some incredible on the ground. The Rietveld, Rietveld. He's covering it on the ground. Sergio took a chunk out of the middle of the green with trying to chip from the middle of the green, which, you know, is a thing that happens sometimes on the PGA Tour. If there's a lot of slope or a lot of break or a bunker maybe in between, but a lot of people calling for Sergio's head after that, like he was reprising his role in Saudi Arabia where he's just damaging greens. It was quite a divot, I will say that. I guess there's... So we talked about this last June, whenever the return to golf was. The backboard at 15. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really come to fruition, I got to say, in June. But apparently a lot of hollering. Cantlay was back there getting relief. people just firing balls up the backboard at 15. Apparently Rich Beem was screaming about it on the Sky broadcast or whatever the Euro version of it is. A lot of controversy around the backboard. Something to keep an eye on as they come down the stretch Saturday and Sunday, 15. And was the baton boy? Do you think
tone
he was
down.
Chasing? Chasing, yeah.
I think there was a very cold mic that set up this morning on PGA Tour Live. You know, there were no hot mics around for the baton boy as he strolled around Harbortown shooting a 5-under 67. You know, he played a great round, but you know, they definitely were quick to cut away after every shot. I didn't hear much of Motormouth. He was definitely Motormouthing because I'd hear him occasionally from, you know, another player's mic, but it seemed like the mic was just turned off.
Well, he's back in the warm embrace, the bosom of the players run organization. He can be a co-producer of that broadcast.
How about Zalatoris? And they're profiting off him on PGA Tour Live, and he's not even a member.
PGA Tour Live can't be profitable. I'm sorry. But yes, yeah, they're putting them up in lights, and they won't give them a PGA Tour card. Come on, that stinks.
He had some rare mistakes. He shot 3-under, but he had a double, a really bad double on the second hole. Just kind of a stupid second shot he tried to hit, and then he risked one. You know, which I thought wasn't possible, but. Yeah, he hit one in the water on four, but he made par. It was incredible. Century. He made the putt.
Okay. Yeah, no, he talked about being fried, though, a little bit fried, so which is understandable, for God's sake.
He's fried, and he's like in 18th.
Right, exactly. Not exactly. Good fry. I don't have anything else. Do you want to talk about the RangeNet controversy? Have we gone into that enough? I mean, I just want to highlight Shane Ryan had reporting on this. Like, look. People think we just talk about stuff that doesn't mean anything, just for shits and giggles. But I'm sorry, backboarding was a major issue. It impacted an entire major championship at the Dinosaur. And now we got, you know, HOAs in Harbortown and charities being impacted while they try to contain. We had near, you know, decapitations in Austin. Bubba almost got hit on the sixth green in Austin. We got fans coming close to fans. Like, this is becoming a real problem. We're spending, this is Shane Ryan, real reporting. It's, I want to say Jason Wright or Jonathan Wright, the tournament organizer. They got two nets. They attached them with carabiners in the middle. They got these two lifts, rental boom lifts. He said, I'd like to say they're qualified, but they're not qualified. Of course, nobody just, you know, gets a bunch of reps doing this. And they maneuvered delicately the nets over trees and into position where it would catch the drives that the permanent net could not. And it even got to the point that involved a slew of complications from buying the wrong equipment at the hardware store to dealing with the tricky guide wires to trimming tree branches that got in the net's way to watching the net get snagged on bolts or sagging in the center or blowing chaotically in the wind. Eventually, they had to bring in a crane because they lacked support rope or cables on the bottom. The process began last Tuesday, and it did not finish last Tuesday. It was the most stressful part of our week. As you noted, $20,000 in different equipment needs. That doesn't include the 30 hours of man hours, and I don't know how many men that was, to get it up and running. The origins of this, they talked about, you know, almost hitting people in the eighth hole, getting into houses, getting into, like, a main road. So, I mean, this is a real problem that we just aren't, like, hollering about here. You know, I'd like to think we're not disingenuous like that. We have reporting.
And this is the thing. The tour is not paying for this. This is not on the tour. This is not on the equipment manufacturers that have created equipment that allow this to happen. This is not paid by the players who are, you know, have a, what, $8 million purse this week. It's paid by the local tournament, and it comes at the end of the day out of what this whole tour supposedly exists for, putting money in charities' pockets.
Yeah.
This is a tournament that has limited amount of fans, so limited on-site revenue, which is primarily where all the charitable money comes from. So you're talking about an event that underwent a no-fan event, basically zero charitable money the year before, And now they have another 20 plus grand. You know, the man hour stuff too is like that takes away from, you know, the upkeep of the golf course, the, you know, sure, what they can do, what the superintendent gets to do the week before. It's just, it's utterly ridiculous.
Screwing around with these boom lifts. It's unbelievable. Yeah, it's, you know, the counter would be they put the hammer down and say, you should be so lucky that we patronize your locale and your course. And if you don't have a range net that can accommodate our tour, then
we'll
go elsewhere.
To TPC, you know.
There's some in South Carolina. There's got to be one.
TPC Myrtle Beach.
There we go.
Who knows if their range is big enough, though.
That's right. That's right. All right, I have nothing else on the first round of the RBC Heritage, believe it or not. On the LPGA, this is probably not even worth talking about because it's going to change. They're doing Wednesday to Friday, and we're recording, you know, late Thursday, but not late enough for Hawaii time. Lydia Ko shoots a 63 in the second round. She's 14 under. Our first round leaders were Yuka Sasso and Brittany Altomare.
That's Altomare.
Moon hits her. Seven birdies in a row. It's just unbelievable. They left her out of notables, and there she goes. Seven in a row, I think, including a chip-in in the first round Wednesday night to take the first-round lead, but that is obsolete at this point. She still hasn't even teed off as we speak. Lydia Ko, though, 63, bounce, you know, kind of circling back on that final round at the Dinosaur, A&A.
So Lydia Ko is now nearly 3 years removed from her last win, and we've seen a lot of streaks end in the last couple weeks. We had the Spieth drought end. We had the Hideki drought end. She's 3 years removed from her
medieval.
the medieval championship.
The Renaissance Fair. Yes.
It's hosted at medieval times. You know? Do you have medieval times by you?
I know, maybe you know what it is, though, right? Yeah, I do. Yeah.
I think there's one by me. I should go one of these days.
Oh, in grade school, we had to go to some field trip to Renaissance Fair. It was terrible. Like Shakespeare. It was the worst. You get those big turkey legs, but you're like a seventh grader. It's disgusting.
It's all right, probably those turkey legs have to be in the same boat as the rotisserie chicken.
There you go. Very perceptive of you, Andy. I didn't think you might get on that. But yeah, the Renaissance Fair.
And now we're like almost 5 years from when Ko was really dominant. I mean, it's almost like hard. I don't know if people forget how good she was, but she was so good. And it seems like she's getting back to like that level. She's in the mix seemingly every week that she plays now.
Yeah.
And I think absolutely. It's just a matter of knocking one down, and then the floodgates might reopen.
And seeing some super low scores, where it really feels like it's all coming together for at least 18 holes.
They should move it over to Hawaii.
What? I was getting shit saying I was on the Big Island. I'm not calling it Wailai, the rainer, you know. I'm aware of Wailai being on Oahu, but Hualai is on the Big Island, and I'm sorry you couldn't understand my pronunciation of Hualai. People getting in my mentions.
I think we should do an episode where we just run down a list of Hawaii golf courses, talk about their names.
Absolutely. All right, so we'll have a full recap of the LPGA, even though it's finishing Saturday night. We'll talk more about that Sunday on the European Tour. Again, this will be moot, not worth spending much time on. Alejandro Canizares at the Austrian Golf Open. That's not to be confused with the Austrian Tennis Open, the Austrian Cricket Open, the Austrian Bowling Open. It's the Austrian Golf Open at Diamond CC. Alejandro Canizares is 5 under. He leads a slew of people at 4 under. Sounds, got intel from the ground. Absolutely miserable weather in Austria right now. I mean, it's not even, you know, mid-April. And apparently it was the whole thing was covered in snow, like last week. Just brutal. There was snow on the course 6 days. Everyone is just getting, you know, blown up. Just big mid-season. Said everyone's just, somebody told me there's schnitzel every meal. That's what you have for every meal is schnitzel. Sounds like the conditions are rough, but My source on the ground said pick Matthias Schwab, the homegrown talent there. But Alejandro Canizares is your early leader.
What? Sad to see Jackie Robinson struggling so much. Bjerregaard plus four.
Oh, what's happened to him? Was it just the weight of a...
Yeah, weight of the comparison.
The next, you know, trailblazer and underdog, you know, that's... You see that happen sometimes. Not everybody can be Gonzaga and build on their Cinderella story into a program. It's one in kind of one flash in the pan year and you're out.
Toby Tree, favorite of the pod, 78. Rough go. Rough Toby go. Must not be a cold weather player.
Yeah. More of a palm tree.
He needs his leaves to grow.
This is so dumb. All right. Elsewhere, other leaderboards, Kevin Doherty, early leader in Vegas. But again, that's still just early going on. Is it Doherty or Doherty? I don't know. I can never know. All right, that's all I got. News, we already hit Sportsbook, RangeNet. Did you want to say something about the LPGA hoodie?
Looks cool. I'm glad to see, like, you know, other people pumping it up. There's a couple NBA
it's
players,
awesome.
Damian Lee. Yeah, it would have been nice to see a professional men's golfer wearing it.
Ken Bazemore had it. I saw Warriors. I think because Michelle Wee helped design them, so the Warriors, via her husband, Johnny West, they must have got them. I would gladly and quickly spend my money on it. I hope they have
me
thick
too.
Boy sizes.
I want one. I'm going to get one as soon as they restock.
ASAP. Yeah, so that's big news. Tie-dye. The hoodie.
Tie-dye hoodie.
Yep. All right, let's go to Flashback Friday. It is brought to you by Precision Pro. They are the range finder of the shotgun start. And by doing so, you get $20 off. You buy their NX9 Slope with Shotgun 20. That is the promo code. They have a 90-day money-back guarantee. I mean, I suppose if you were sort of a dishonest kind of person, you can manipulate that, but I wouldn't suggest it. I don't think you're going to want your money back. There's free shipping. There's a 2-year warranty. It's the only range finder that comes with lifetime battery replacements. And of course, most importantly, they have Eric, their customer service guy, which people are continuing to hit up Eric to rave reviews. There was a little field testing that was done. You know, the shotgunners call, they just say hi, just to say hi to Eric. But there was some field testing done. And they tested other competitive rangefinder companies, the similar services. Most don't even have a number to call, let alone an Eric. They don't even have a number to call. We're still waiting to hear back from emails they sent a week ago to similar competitors. And one big company didn't even realize they made rangefinders. How about that? Wow. Some parent company didn't even know they were making rangefinders. I tell you what, Eric knows that they make rangefinders. They know they have lifetime battery replacement. Again, Shotgun 20 gets you $20 off your NX9 Slope. Golf season is here. Stock up, fill up the bag. Make sure you're ready to go with an NX9 from precisionpro.com. All right, what's our Flashback Friday this week?
We're going back to the 2012 PGA. I got in the mood. I wrote something for the old PGA, and I was doing research on an article I was writing for them. And I came across some interesting stuff that I had forgotten about. So I thought, what a perfect way. You know, we're already looking ahead to the next major. I can't wait for it. And, you know, the Masters was a great table setter for the year. So,
All right. I thought you were going to say like a little amuse-bouche appetizer.
No, Masters. No, I'm saying okay, like right, it got the year right. off to a hot
yeah,
start
I gotcha.
Here.
Great to start. Okay, good.
So obviously 2012 PGA will always be remembered as Rory's coronation, you know. Quick thing on that, just for anybody that's a recent golf fan or that forgot, you know, this is from Alan Shipnuck's SI piece after the event. When Tiger prevailed at the 1999 PGA Championship to win his second of 14 majors, he was already a technician and a grinder, exuding maximum effort. Rory is a field player extraordinaire. And on Sunday at the 94th PGA Championship, during what should have been the most pressure-packed round of his young career, he glided around Kiawah Island's feared ocean course with a la-di-da insuance. God, I was practicing that. Insuance.
You were practicing.
Insouciance. Which means insouciance. and Susans, which means
it's a great word. Know, a lot of vowels in that with, one. A lot of
with
vowels
basic with you know walking around without a care in the world is what it was meant to. The word translates to. Woods' swing has always been controlled violence. McElroy's is pure poetry, maybe the sweetest swing this side of Sam Snead. Even in the prime of his youth, Woods had moments of high anxiety during rounds, defined by high wire recoveries and improbable shot making. Rory hits it. McElroy hits it so pure he can make the game look a little too easy. Throughout his 8-stroke rout, he broke Jack Nicklaus's 32-year record tournament record. McElroy displayed a dazzling all-around game. During the bogeyless first round, 67, he hit 15 greens and was 3-3 of Sanchez. His third round, 67, was a tour de force with the driver as he hit 11 fairways and topped the field at 319 yards a pop. On Sunday, he missed 8 greens and got up and down every time, bookending his tournament with another bogey-free effort, a 6-under 66. This flashback is about the one round that Shipnuck did not hit on. Last bow to tie up with Rory. So Rory, at this point, gets his second major, and comparisons are ablaze.
Expectations. June of 2011, August of 2012, and by a lot of shots both times.
McElroy is already halfway to the career Grand Slam, which is no surprise. Long and straight, with a soft touch, works pretty much everywhere. His career is destined to be measured against Woods's. But it is not too early to start talking about Nicklaus's epic record of 18 majors.
Oh, my God.
McElroy is only a few weeks older than Jack when he bagged his second big one, the 1963 Masters. Can McElroy get there? This is Graham McDowell. He has always been driven and motivated. Now he's obsessed with being the best he can be. That may be good enough.
Okay. I mean, do we want to get into the whole Rory psychoanalysis?
No, this was not what it was meant to be.
He's reading books now. He's juggling. I don't know. He's got a wife and kids and perspective, and other things happen. I don't know.
Maybe this is when he was dating Wozniacki.
Was he? Okay.
Yeah, he was getting a lot of heat for living life, effectively.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Buzz off. Everybody should buzz off with the Rory.
Exactly. Okay. So anyway, second round. This is the one round that Shipnuck didn't mention in here. He did mention it in another part of the piece, but it deserves... The second round is what the flashback's about. This deserves a whole platter. This is almost like the PGA Championships version of the Great Eczema Classic. In the second
round,
we're
going to really whet our appetite for a month from now. I mean, I can't. This is just getting me juiced up. All right, I can't wait to hear what you got.
There's a front that rolled through Kiowa, and as a lot of people remember, the week was like very docile. It rained a lot, so it was soft, and the winds were non-existent. But not in the second round. 30-mile-an-hour winds hit the ocean course, which is a regular occurrence at the ocean course. It is regularly windy there. Like I remember I played it a few months ago, and I was like, oh, it's going to be a calm day. And I got out there, and I was like, God, this is like a 3-club wind, So on this day, 30-mile-an-hour wind, white caps on the ocean. There are more scores in the 90s than the 60s. 30 players failed to break it. Yeah, two in the 90s, one in the 60s. 30 players failed to break 80. It's the highest single round scoring average ever in a round in the PGA Championship. It was 78.09. The next closest was from 1958, which was the first year that they went to stroke play.
Stroke play, okay.
And that was 76.83, a full shot higher. So the round of the day came from Vijay. Vijay shot 69. He was the only guy that shot 69. There were four other players that shot under par. Tiger was one of them. He shot 71. So the 36-hole co-lead was the 49-year-old Vijay Singh, Tiger Woods, and do you know who the third was?
It's the English guy, right? Is it the English not day, David or is that Lind. Sunday? Yeah, David Lind. No.
It is okay. It is none other than the Swedish pancake Carl Pettersson, who shot a 74.
So anchoring his way around. The anchor band. This was not yet
pre-anchor band when he was still a factor in professional golf. So Rory shot 75 after he shot the, you know, bogey free 67 to open.
Three below
so
the scoring average though. Not horrendous.
Exactly. So he shot 75. It was the highest score ever by a winner of the PGA in the second round. So McIlroy on his route, he said so this is from Shipnuck's piece too. McIlroy began the second round of the PGA, a stroke off the lead, but didn't panic as he played the first 13 holes and four over par. He stepped on the tee of the par 3 14th. The wind was howling off the right. Rory loves to hit a high draw, but over the last few months, he has been working hard to perfect a hard cut. He held one beautifully into the breeze, what his caddy J.P. Fitzgerald called maybe the best shot of the week. It led to a crucial birdie, and McIlroy added another coming in, holding together for 75 on a day when the field average was 78-1. So it was like, especially after like the meltdowns at St. Andrews in 2010 and the Masters, this was seen as like a huge turning point for Rory. I want to get into some quotes from the conditions. One other thing. So the highest score of the day was Doug Wade, club pro from Dayton. Don't mean to drive by shoot Doug Wade, but it was the second highest score in PGA Championship history. It was one shy of the highest, which was 94. Another club pro, Michael Fry, he finished par, birdie, par. Those are like some of the hardest holes in the world to shoot 90. So Woods,
are we headed for this? Potentially in a month. I mean, this was, I talked about this. This was one of my predictions for the season in January or something, that we could have a much harder PGA than US Open, which is rare. And because I looked up wind like averages and numbers. I remember. I don't remember the specifics, but they're, I mean, August is one of the calmest months, and May is certainly, I don't know if it's.
I did
the
some
hardest,
investigative
but...
reporting on this.
Okay.
August is the highest rainfall month. Okay. May is one of the driest months. And then in August is the calmest month for wind, and May is like right in the middle of windy.
Not the worst, but easy. Okay.
So,
All right.
We
fantastic.
Should see some of this. I would bet my, you know, a decent, I'm not going to bet my life, but I bet, you know, a decent sum of money on at least 2 days of 20 miles an hour out there. All right, so here's what Wood said. It was fun, but it was also tough. You're getting blown all over the place. It was just a very difficult day. On a Pete Dye golf course, there's nowhere to go, and it's not hard to make doubles and triples here. And they're just talking about that without the wind, that quote. All right, here's Mickelson. The wind was torturous. Most every hole was a direct crosswind, and you're not really able to play the ball down on the ground here like a normal links go. Every green's propped up. He's like, you have to play it through the air because basically all the greens all rappel off. You can't really roll a shot up.
It is all crosses a lot, right? So many crosses there.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, which is even more
challenging. Well, the thing, the wind doesn't really prevail there. It blows all different directions. Okay. So like one day you might get it out of one direction, one day completely different. Like we could see where they play practice rounds in one wind and then it'd be completely different for the tournament. Like we've seen with some flashbacks that provide specific carnage. This is more Mickelson. I could have been a couple shots better, of course, but I limited the damage as much as I could. You can't get aggressive with this weather. You don't even care where the pin is. You just try and hit it on the green somewhere. Jamie Donaldson of Wales added his 2 cents. You think you have a chance towards the end where it's blowing downwind, but the wind was so strong you just couldn't get near the flags or the greens. It's just a brutal test of golf. Here's Ernie Els said he was striping it. Said he was hitting the ball. So he said, I'd like it more if I was making frickin' putts. But I like it. I'm hitting it as good as I did at Lytham. Great layout. I think Pete Dye is a genius. Some really difficult holes on the back nine. The front nine is a scoring nine. But it's just funny. This is everybody's talking about carnage. And Ernie's in his bad putting period of his life.
That doesn't sound like Ernie. Well, then he would win. He would win the next week, right? Or the, yeah. Or no, actually, he'd won the preceding major.
The golf shots this golf course, as you hit time and time and time again, you really have to hit phenomenal golf shots. The room for error is so tiny that when you get it wrong, you could be 15 feet below the green in a bad lie with not much of a shot. This is the best one of all of them. Vijay Singh. If you had a golf course like this and you asked me to go out and play in golf in windy conditions, I'd say, no, I'm not going to play. I guess nobody's going to go out and play in conditions like this. But it's a major and we have to go out there and just struggle and manage yourself the best you can.
This is
the guy that shot the best round of the day.
And also would play golf and hit balls until the sun comes down every day. He doesn't know. I don't want to play that. Unbelievable.
So the day before I played this January, it was blowing like 35 miles an hour. It was legitimately like a gale warning out there on the island. I remember like walking the dog outside and being like, God, thank God I'm not playing out there. And if I was scheduled to play out there, I would have called and been like, I'm not playing.
Yeah.
Can we move it to another day? Like, I would not have gone played. It was so windy. And it sounds just like this day. And it's funny because I went the next day I was playing and I went in the pro shop. I was like, how was it out here yesterday? Because I was like, genuine. Yeah, it's brutal. I go, did people like cancel tee times? Like, because I would have played in that. And he goes, no, we had no cancellations. So then my caddy, I'm like, hey.
Popped with some crazy fee and canceled for $400 tee time or whatever it is, $500 tee time.
I asked my caddy, I'm like, did you caddy yesterday? And she's like, yeah, it was insane. It was brutal. I was like, how did the people do? She's like, oh, they weren't very good golfers. They lost 24 golf balls in the first five holes. No joke, 24 balls. It's a place that has like a decent amount of space. Like, it's not like ever comfortable amount of space, but it's not like claustrophobic like some of the other courses on the property. Right. But playing in a 30 mile hour wind would be, in a crosswind, would just be an utter disaster. So anyways, that's your flashback. It was mostly on the carnage of round two.
I love it.
And hopefully we get more of that. 78 scoring average, I think, would get people, would really wet some people's whistles.
Yeah, people would be fired up. That'd be a great little PGA identity maker. That would be fantastic. We'll see. All right, looking forward to that. That was a good appetizer, a good way to get our interest looking towards the next men's major. Appreciate it. All right, everyone enjoy your Friday.
Hey, is Ricky in the field?
At the PGA?
Yeah.
Well, they make sure everyone in the top 100 gets an invite.
He's not in the top 100.
Falling out of that?
He's out of that.
Currently?
No.
That's not right, is it?
He's 101.
He's 101. Holy. They'll. So they always go beyond the 100 to fill it because, you know, guys, WD or can't play.
Westy might not show up.
It could get dicey. See, he doesn't have some sort of exemption. Some sort of PGA will make sure he's there. I don't know. Maybe.
So I only asked because he was like one of the notable names that shot in the 80s. The other ones were like Hunter Mahan and some other guys. Sure. Graham McDowell, I think.
Sure. All right. We'll check in. We got plenty of time to figure out.
Hey, Ricky's one other status. Note. I think the PGA didn't have the Ryder Cup rankings right because I got another email about him.
Yeah.
Zalatoris is not 22nd. He's actually 18th. He's within striking distance here.
Could he play his way into the Olympics too? I mean,
he'd have to go crazy.
He'd have to win and get his card and all that.
Well, as Shackelford pointed out, in a I think one of his quadrilateral posts. Yeah. The blood doping is coming up soon.
Might lead to some withdrawals. Some
yeah. Might folks. See a certain thick golfer not opt out of the Olympics.
That's true. All right. Everyone enjoy your Fridays. Enjoy your weekends. Enjoy the LPGA from Hawaii, a little harbor town. And we'll be back with you on Monday to wrap it all up.